Let me see you get loose.
It's going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What is up? Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Mwad has come and gone, but what a great day it was.
It was a great day. It was a low-key day, and it was exactly what I would expect from a non-celebratory age, which is of 34. You know, nothing over the top, nothing extravagant. 35, you know, half a decade coming up next year, so we'll have to plan accordingly, but we have a year to do so.
Yes, we do. We'll be ready for that. I mean, I thought we laid a strong foundation for you, but again, happy birthday. Glad you enjoyed the day there. And we kind of got away from the Super Bowl yesterday because of it was Matt Wilhelm's birthday. It was Matt Wilhelm Appreciation
Something we're
day.
Celebrating, right?
Yeah, it was definitely something worth celebrating. So today we can get into this Super Bowl. What a great game. Obviously, everybody right now dissecting the play at the end. You have all the statisticians coming out and making the case for Pete Carroll that, yes, it was right for him to throw the football there. And it also kind of gets into another thing, too, that I want to talk a little bit about, and that is the unbelievable outcome bias that is, you know, that permeates our society, especially with Twitter and all and hot takes that, you know, frankly, that was a good decision or a bad decision before the ball was snapped. The outcome of what happened is not important really in what happened. I know people, what are you talking about? For example, what I mean is you could hit on a 20 at a casino and pull an ace and get 21. It was not a good decision.
No.
Did it work? Was the outcome good? Yes, but good decisions can have negative outcomes just like negative decisions can have good outcomes. You don't want to be outcome biased. That being said, I personally probably still would have run the ball and tried to get it in there on second down. I understand the rationale that now has gone into that play where they've been talking about, you know, you wanted to throw it, so you had run pass option on third and fourth down. They probably were going to run it both third and fourth down with Marshawn Lynch. And then you have the statisticians come out and say, well, of the 39 running backs with 10 carries from the 1 yard line over the last 5 years, Marshawn Lynch was 30th out of those 39 in terms of his effectiveness in such situations. So a lot went into it. I will say this right off the top. I do not buy in any way, shape, or form. I don't buy in any way, shape, or form the fact that this was done premeditated to put the spotlight on Russell Wilson at the expense of a guy like Marshawn Lynch. I don't buy that.
Or the expense of losing the football game. And Nathan, that's what when I brought that up as we were about to jump on air, the one thing that we have to think about when we want to talk, you know, run pass or this conspiracy theory of making Russell Wilson look good and taking the luster off of Marshawn Lynch and what he does and what he has accomplished in that football game is you've got 35 seconds to for Pete Carroll to convey to Darren Bevel, run pass. What do you want to go with, coach? Run it, throw it, whatever it is. And then Bevel's got to go to his play call sheet, go to his goal lines, find his goal line section, which from a pass standpoint probably has 4 to 5 plays, then also to determine what personnel the New England Patriots are in, which might have whittled it down from 4 or 5 plays to 2 or 3 plays, convey that play via audio into Russell Wilson's helmet. Russell Wilson then has to be in the huddle to scream out the play, ready, break, you get to the line. And then also, too, you have a Super Bowl contender in the New England Patriots playing very good football and deserving of being there to be the best representing the AFC. And Seattle has to out-execute the Patriots in this circumstance to score a touchdown and have Pete Carroll and everybody as a part of that 35-second decision look great to get the outcome that they wanted. So a lot of moving parts, and I just don't think that Pete Carroll, when he has to make that snap decision at a career-defining moment, which is going back-to-back as Super Bowl champions, is going to
against
do something.
Against a team that fired him.
Against a team that has fired him, you know, to secure the legacy of maybe a new dynasty that has become the Legion of Boom in Seattle and what they've done in past or in the recent years, to make a snap decision out of haste for one and to glorify another is completely ludicrous.
I agree. Completely ludicrous, and I don't believe that that had anything to do with what ultimately happened at the end of that game there. I think that it was a decision they made. They were doing it for time purposes. A lot of people have explained it. Nate Silver at 538.com said that he understands why the decision was made, and that's a good article worth checking out there as well. So we'll talk about that. What's one word to describe Super Bowl 49? Who do you blame for the Seahawks' loss on Sunday? And by the way, this is something I've heard some other people say, and I want to say it too. How about the fact that Malcolm Butler just made a great play? Why does somebody always have to be the scapegoat for something that happened? Why is it always somebody screwed up? Why can't it be Malcolm Butler knew the route combination that was coming, jumped the slant, made an unbelievable physical break on the ball, then bodied up, got the receiver out of the way, made an unbelievable catch? Why isn't it just somebody made a great play? Why in our society is it so much about saying who screwed up, who's to blame? Why is it as much about, hey, these guys went out there, they called the play that they thought was the right play in the situation. If you watched all 22 tape, it certainly looks like Ricardo Lockett is wide open and going to walk in for the touchdown. Wilson threw the ball perfectly accurately. Malcolm Butler just made a better play.
You're absolutely right, Nate. And what I always talk about, and if you tuned in throughout the season, when it comes to football and the great football teams, it's win your one-on-one battle. And in this case, Malcolm Butler, as you said, was beat, but made up ground and made a decisive play. And in some cases, which I haven't heard yet from him, I am sure through a process of elimination when it comes to defense, knowing by the route combination or the alignment of those two wide receivers, that he had there was two routes that they could have run, and based on the release of the two wide receivers, he knew exactly what was coming and reacted appropriately and darted in front of Lockett
like
and got the ball.
5 yards in the blink of an eye. He had an unbelievable break on the ball. Made a great play.
And it had to be through tape study. That's the only way you know it's coming.
As a fifth corner,
you know. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's impressive, and that's why you got to stay in there and focus to get, when you get your opportunity, you get it done. We're going to hear a lot of sound bites about the play. By the way, did you see Gronk on Jimmy Kimmel last night?
I did not see Gronk, but I heard Gronk.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yes. Gronk is Gronk.
He's going to be so much fun this summer, don't you think? I feel like now that they won the Super Bowl, I feel like he's going to go out there and go crazy.
And this is what, you know, when you talk about sports and guys are young and they need to live. You've got a guy with an exuberant personality that does everything right, that has already been paid more money than Josh Gordon and Johnny Manziel has been combined, or even their contracts combined, right? But yet he has all the fun in the world with a smile on his face and abides by the law and plays within the rules, you know? Yeah, well, in some cases he's a Patriot, so we can't always say within the rules, but within the laws of, and he understands what it is to be a pro, and does what's necessary when his number is called, and still lives his life as a young man in the National Football League.
Yes, indeed. And again, we don't even need to talk about that as well. We don't even talk about blame. I want to talk about why were the Seahawks in that position? Why were the Patriots in that position? And ultimately, why did the Patriots win the game? We can talk about anything you want in that Super Bowl, one of the best. I certainly saw one of the best games possible in a long time. So I thought it was a great Super Bowl to watch, and I certainly enjoyed that. But I do think it's fun. You know, listen, obviously that's what people do in the media. It's all the blame game and a lot of negativity and a lot of snap decisions. But I like to focus a little positivity every now and then. Mr. Bobby Carr Jr. listening to the show out there, sending love. A fine man from my days back in the day at KNR. Fine man. Saying, why you knew the media if you're asking why we have to blame someone for the play call. I don't think we have to blame somebody. I'm just saying, you know, what the heck?
No, we don't. You know, and I mean, that also being said is, if that play happened in the first quarter, you know, and they don't come away with points, and then essentially you can say the Patriots just go and maybe get one first down and punt the ball and win back the field, is it a game-defining play? No. And the reason why I say that is, if you've listened the last, you know, throughout the playoffs and the college football playoffs, I talked about Ohio State getting down inside the red zone and coming away with just field goals. Florida State did it multiple times against Oregon. The Green Bay Packers against Seattle Seahawks came back to nip them in the butt. Sure. Two times inside the 10, they come away with two field goals. You know, you've got to score touchdowns. But it happened in that case, everyone's defining the last 5 minutes. And in my eyes, you can say the first quarter, because if Green Bay would have put the foot to the throat and went and got two touchdowns in the first quarter, that game's out of reach. as bad as Seattle played, regardless of those last 5 minutes.
Correct.
There weren't enough big plays left for Seattle to make defensively and offensively to get back into that football game. If Green Bay would have put their foot to the throat, but yet everyone talks about the last 5 minutes, not the first 8 minutes when Green Bay had total control of the football game. So you have to, it's all, and you can look back at, I'm sure, it, and very cliche, but it's a game of inches, you know, and everybody says that. And it's for a reason, because it comes down to one play. And in this case, you never know when your number is going to be called, so you always have to be ever ready to make that play. As I did in the Super Bowl, I prepared as if I was going to play defense because it was one injury, a hamstring pull, whether
they
it was a
Arrington.
Play.
That's how we got his opportunity.
Exactly. A play, a series, a quarter, a half, or the full game. I was ready to do so, and that's what you have to love about these stories, about these guys, you know, and what a great story from him going from the streets, literally not living on the streets, but, you know, working at a job that the common person does to being on the highest high of, as we talk, one of our hot topics, or after further review is, should have been considered for MVP of the Super Bowl. I mean, come on now. You can't script that any better.
You certainly can, and even though he may not have won the MVP of the Super Bowl, the good news is that he is going to be getting the truck. Tom Brady's going to give him the truck he won for being
the
MVP.
That's very appropriate.
Classy guy, that Tom Brady.
It is Tom Brady. It's kind of a little, you know, thumb out towards Chevy, I guess.
No, he's just saying, listen, just sharing
the
love.
No, it's great for Tom Brady. I'm just saying is, would he have given him an Escalade or a ZR1 Corvette? I don't know.
He might have.
That might have looked better in
Tom
Brady's
garage.
Tom
Brady. I think he's doing just fine.
He is doing fine.
I think he's doing just fine. No question. Yeah, I think he's doing more than just fine. Tom Brady loving life. Gronk, by the way, talking about that fight at the end of the game, was like, I'm throwing haymakers. I just wanted to throw some haymakers out there. He didn't care. You gotta love Gronk.
You have to love Gronk. He is a young man living out his dream right now. And because of the success that he's associated with, his personal play, the amount of money, the contract that he has, and how comfortable he is playing under that Patriot Way umbrella, it allows him the platform to be that exuberant young kid doing something he loves.
The best thing, too, was when he was on Kimmel, he was asked, he joked with, he's saying that he hadn't read a book since ninth grade, and he said that the last book that he read, was, he even got titled right, A Mockingbird to Remember. I think he was trying to say To Kill a Mockingbird. A Gronk, we do have that. We'll play that sound later on. You want to throw it up right now? We'll do it. We'll do it right now. Why not? Gronk was unbelievable on Jimmy Kimmel. So we've got the sound. This is what, to me, this is why you like this guy. Now, this is somebody, too, though, if your team was not winning all the time, then I'm sure people would be tired of his Gronk antics. But when you're winning all the time, there's nobody as good as Gronk. Here he was on Jimmy Kimmel last night.
It's a giant of a man, a warrior. His muscles ripple in soft light and splash of water coming from the shower head.
Ooh.
Dang, that's sexy.
That was Gronk reading from his book, A Gronking to Remember.
He's going to sell a lot of books.
Does he get royalties? Like, is he, Gibbs, do you know, is he involved with the book?
I don't know. He keeps talking about it, and you would think he is from the sound of it.
He should at this point. I mean, if it sells at all, it's solely going to be because of all the promotion he's done.
And winning a Super Bowl doesn't hurt.
Right, but I'm saying somebody wrote this, like, fake romance novel about him. That's all I'm saying.
They have to.
I guess they do. All right, when we come back, let's talk the Super Bowl. We also will talk Johnny Manziel. Going to rehab, we have some sound bites from Herm Edwards. We saw LeBron James tweet his support for Johnny Manziel. And again, my position on it, very simple. I think it's a good move for him. It's clearly something he felt that he needed to do. Adam Schefter on his Facebook detailed how Johnny Manziel raised the hand himself to make this happen. We'll take a look. I'll give you some insight on that from Adam Schefter as well. So lots to get to here today on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.